Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's happening all over the world. It's happening in Iceland, big time right now. Yes, the conservative philosophy so badly discredited and so vigorously defended by Boehner, this weekend on Meet the Press, taking down another country. You'd think after Chile and Argentina and the shock therapy in Russia and so on and so on, you know, they would have figured out. Anyhow, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live from our home station, KPOJ, Portland, Oregon. It is January 26th. Our quote for the day, in matters of style, swim with the current. In matters of principle, stand like a rock. Thomas Jefferson. And in matters of principle, Iceland, they changed the game, as it were. And Björgvin Sigurdsson resigned yesterday. He was the prime minister. The coalition, the ruling coalition of the Independence Party, the prime minister's Independence Party, and the Social Democrats Party, has collapsed. Basically, the Republicans and Democrats of Iceland are toast because they've been working together and they embraced this. And by the way, the Green Party is probably going to be the big winner out of this. We'll see how this shakes out. And you may say, what does Iceland have to do with me? It has everything to do with you, because Iceland did what Phil Gramm recommended we do, which we did. They just did it much more aggressively and with a much smaller safety net, because Iceland is a country of only a few hundred thousand people. And they saw this explosion in their wealth. See, this is what happens when you deregulate banks, you deregulate businesses, you say there's no rules to the game anymore, and by the way, we're going to cut taxes on the rich too. All of the stabilizers, all of the rudders, all of the things that tend to work to keep systems solid and safe and under control, all of them fell. And the consequence is that in Iceland now, the government has fallen. The banks are a disaster. The economy is in the tank. This is just an absolute disaster for Iceland. The IMF has pumped $827 million into their economy, another $1.3 billion coming in three installments. This doesn't sound like a lot of money, but keep in mind, this is a country of about 300,000 people, as I recall. The neighboring governments of Finland, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, the other Scandinavian countries who consider themselves part of this kind of Scandinavian alliance, they're going to lend Iceland another $2.5 billion. Of course, the prime minister has resigned, he says, for health reasons. I mean, they're literally having riots in the streets in Iceland. And the opposition left Green Party, according to the polls, is ahead of both of the mainstream parties now. So this may well be a transformational, absolutely transformational experience going on in Iceland. And now they've got to figure out, you know, what are they going to do about the elections in May? Of course, that's the next big thing. You know, there are elections coming up, and so we'll see. Now, all of this, you know, leads back to this piece that I wrote this weekend, which is up on commondreams.org right now. The Two Santa Clauses is the title, or How the Republican Party Has Conned America for 30 Years. And I should have added, and how they conned Iceland, too. Because it's not just the Republican Party. It's this whole Republican philosophy. It's this whole general craziness. It's that whole the whole Republican philosophy. It is how they conned them all, right? This weekend, House Republican leader John Boehner played out the role of Jude Winiski, on NBC's Meet the Press. Did you see this thing? You know, first Lawrence Summers was on there, and he, you know, who has not been so much of a fan of infrastructure projects, he actually made a pretty spirited defense for them. And he pointed out, you know, tax cuts don't produce the kind of results that we need. And, you know, on the other hand, you know, if you produce a dollar in tax cuts, you might get 20, 30 cents worth of stimulation in the economy. Depends on where the tax cuts go. If you're cutting taxes of working people, then a dollar of tax cut may produce a dollar worth of stimulation. But the problem is that over the long period of time, and we've seen this ever since, you know, Reagan's tax cuts, when you cut taxes on working people, over time, it will lead to a decrease in the wages of working people. Because their employers know that, hey, they're getting a little more money now, and they were perfectly happy working for less before, so let's cut their pay. But over the short term, cutting taxes on working people will produce some stimulation. And that's the argument that Obama is making. But over the long term, it doesn't. And here you've got Boehner coming along saying, oh, no, you want to stimulate the economy, cut the taxes on the rich. Well, we've seen how that works. When you cut taxes on the rich, particularly when you get them below 50%, which is where they have been ever since Reagan came into office or ever since 81, when you cut the taxes on the rich, then what you have is basically the beginning of bubble economies. Dean Baker has a new book out right now. You know, I read it yesterday, and it's all about how these bubble economies, and there's an excerpt from it on Common Dreams from last week. It's all about how these bubble economies started, how you know, the Reagan tax cuts led to the first bubble, the dot-com bubble, and then that imploded, and then that led directly to the housing bubble. And then we had commodities bubbles as the housing bubble was collapsing, where oil was going through the roof. And what's going to be the next bubble? It's like everybody's trying to create another bubble. So how did the Republicans get away with this? How did they sell this thing to the American people? How did they sell it to Iceland? How did they convince us and the world? How did they pull this thing off? This is incredible. Well, it turns out that the way they did it was with a guy who you've probably never heard of. Those of you who are regular listeners to the program know a few weeks ago I talked about this briefly. And now I got so much feedback from this. People saying I'd never heard of Jude Winiski. Who is this guy? Ironically, he died of a heart attack the day that Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. But he's the guy in 1974 who invented the phrase supply side economics. For 7,000 years. Going back to ancient Sumeria, going back to the times when, I mean, we can find the tablets and we can find the coins, or we could before we paved over the city of Uruk, the world's, arguably the world's first major city, modern city, built by Gilgamesh, you know, the Epic of Gilgamesh, you hear about and read about in high school and college, the oldest known written down story, at least out of our culture, the Hindus claim older ones. But out of what we call Western culture, what led to Western culture, Gilgamesh cut down the forests of northern Iraq and the cedars of Lebanon and used that. And in order to do so, he had to cut off the head of the forest god Humbuba, which so enraged the god of gods Enlil that he visited destruction upon. Now, it took about 300 years for it to happen. Visited destruction upon Gilgamesh's city, Uruk. And really what it was they were growing barley unsustainably, and they had so much salt accumulate in their soil from rerouting the Euphrates that they had cut down the forests, and so they had desertification. You know, the land became desert as it is today. It used to be a lush forest in northern Iraq. It became desert, and the fields became so salty they couldn't grow barley, and they thought it was, you know, Enlil punishing them. But in any case, we can still find the records, the financial records of those interactions. Those records are still out there. For 7,000 years, we have known that demand is driven by people having consumers, the mass of the people, the vast majority of people, having money in their pocket to buy things. And in 1974, Jude Waninsky came along and he said, no. Demand is driven by the existence of things to buy. And the more stuff you can have to buy, the more demand there will be. So what we need to do is we need to import more stuff from China. We need to increase the variety of products. We need to increase the amount of manufacturing. And that will cause people to want to buy things. It's called supply-side economics. It doesn't work. It's a fantasy. But John Boehner is still out there promoting this. The Republicans are still promoting it. And Waninsky came up with a way of selling it because nobody was buying it. In 74, when he came up out with this thing, you know, Nixon wasn't buying it. Jerry Ford wasn't buying it. None of, you know, the Republican Party, Nelson Rockefeller, none of them. They would have nothing to do with it. And so he came up in 76 with a way of selling supply-side economics. He called it the two Santa Claus theory. And this two Santa Claus theory, what John Boehner was doing this weekend and is continuing to do, and you're hearing it from the RNC, this two Santa Claus theory is how the Republican Party has conned America for 30 years and how they conned Iceland, too. I'll tell you the details right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Tom Hartman here. Hey, guys, do you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate? Like it or not, you probably will, because eventually it's going to happen to most of us as we get older. If you're urinating more frequently, especially if you're waking up two, maybe three times a night to go to the bathroom, that's the first sign. Second sign might be burning, pain, or even problems in the bedroom. This is not just an old man's concern. It happens to American men more often than in other countries and can occur as young as 30. So don't ignore the symptoms. Get checkups from your doctor and order your risk-free bottle of Beta Prostate to support healthy prostate functioning. Every man should take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate will help keep your prostate healthy, and it's a natural alternative. You don't need a prescription for it. Call now and order Beta Prostate risk-free. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Don't put this call off till tomorrow. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
He's one of the smartest guys on the radio.
The conventional wisdom is that if you lower taxes, working people will have more money. The reality is that when you lower taxes, the only group who has more money is the rich.
Tom Hartman, nationwide.
And I'm telling you, most Democrats don't realize this. They haven't bothered to look at history or study economics. And the vast majority of working people don't know it.
Tom Hartman, 9 to noon.
Because the majority of people in the media are millionaires.
On AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
In business, it's important to take a new perspective, like from an 8,000-foot mountain peak, or maybe from a gently rocking fishing boat. You see, at the Port of Calama, business and life come together. The Port of Calama offers a beautiful, affordable lifestyle with urban amenities without city hassle, all in a thriving business environment. The Port of Calama has space for your business, plus big tax exemptions and financial incentives. How big? See for yourself. Port of Calama, where business lives. Visit portofcalama.com.
Remember that time on Friends when Joey finally got a steady job on a soap opera? To celebrate, he surprised Chandler with a pair of leather recliners set right in front of their big screen TV. Chandler's reaction? Sweet mother of all that is good and pure. Do your chairs excite you that much? They will if you shop at a Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery. Because unlike those vintage TV chairs, today's Lazy Boy recliners come in over 70 uniquely designed and ridiculously comfortable styles, from cool contemporary to cozy traditional looks. Unlike cheap imitations, Lazy Boy recliners are built to last, with patented designs for full body and lumbar support. Experience all that is good and pure at a Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery. Six stores in Portland and Salem, online at lazyboyportland.com. Lazy Boy, your home now. Put your feet up.
Worried about losing your home? Is your bank threatening to foreclose? Well, there's hope. Operation Hope, America's leading financial literacy and empowerment nonprofit. If you're facing mortgage payment challenges, we just may be able to help. Get free, reliable information and guidance by calling the Operation Hope Mortgage Hotline at 888-388-HOPE. That's 888-388-4673. Look, don't lose your home just because you didn't pick up the phone. Make that call today or visit us at operationhope.org.
Did you know that wetlands are one of the world's most valuable places? I'm Morgan Freeman, speaking on behalf of Ducks Unlimited, world leader in wetlands and waterfowl conservation. Wetlands benefit everyone by filtering and cleaning our water. Wetlands trap and slow flood waters. Wetlands provide you a location for hunting, fishing, boating, and a place to enjoy nature. Help Ducks Unlimited by supporting its Wetlands for Tomorrow campaign. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation today, wetlands for tomorrow.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hour, Tom Hartman here. The Tom Hartman program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Teamster.org is their website, and well worth checking out. Now, just it's really important to understand this, the genesis of this, because once you understand it, then everything that the Republicans are doing right now suddenly makes sense. Everything they're going to be doing for the next 4 or 8 years suddenly makes sense. In fact, everything they've done for the last 30 years suddenly makes sense. So, but you have to understand the context of this thing. The Republican Party, ever since the 1880s, in fact, let's go all the way back to the beginning. Let's just put the whole thing in the broad sweep of history so we understand how it all works. From the founding of this country, there were liberal parties and conservative parties. The original liberal party was called the Anti-Federalists, and then they changed their name to the Democratic Republicans. And then in the 1820s, they dropped the word Republicans, and they simply became known as the Democrats, the Democratic Party. It was founded by Thomas Jefferson. The Democratic Party is the oldest continual existence political party in the history of the world. Okay, although the George W. Bush, WhiteHouse.org, said that Thomas Jefferson founded the Republican Party. Sorry, he founded the Democratic Party. Okay, and so you had the Democratic Party going back to Jefferson, and you had the Federalists, who were today's Republicans. They were the conservatives. The Federalists died in the 1820s. They went down in flames, and they were replaced by the Whigs in the 1830s. So again, you had the Democrats on, you know, on the left, as it were, and you had the Whigs on the right. The Whigs went down in flames in the 1840s, leading to the rise in 1856 in Jackson, Michigan, in June of 1856, the first meeting of the Republican Party. And by that time, the Democratic Party had become fairly corrupted by slavery, and so the Republican Party was a reform party. In 1856. And their second presidential candidate, their first serious national presidential candidate that they fielded was Abraham Lincoln. And after Lincoln died, the Democratic Party was still the party of slavery, party of the South. The Republican Party was the party of the North, the Reform Party. Within 20 years after Lincoln died, the Republican Party got taken over by the railroad interests, who Lincoln had to get into bed with in order to win the Civil War. And the Republican Party in the 1880s became the party of big business, and the Democratic Party began to be the party of the people once again. And by and large has ever since. So from the 1880s until today, the Republican Party represented corporate interests and the rich. Democratic Party represented people, working people, unions, things like that. Okay, got that? Now, here's the problem the Republican Party had. They couldn't sell their product. They couldn't sell themselves as we're the party of the rich. Nobody was buying it. So what happened was eventually after Herbert Hoover, after three consecutive, you know, Coolidge and all these guys, after three consecutive Republicans in the 1920s cut taxes and deregulated the economy, it led to this huge bubble in the 20s, which led to the crash of 29 and Herbert Hoover's disastrous presidency. And after that, the Republicans said, OK, we're no longer going to be at least on the surface, that party of the rich and the corporations exclusively. And this is why in 1954, November 8, 1954, 3 years into his presidency, Republican President Dwight Eisenhower wrote a private letter to his brother David, who had written him a letter, Edgar had written him a long letter. You can find this in the Eisenhower libraries. In fact, you can find them online. Edgar had sent him a long letter saying, you're not holding true to conservative principles. You're compromising, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the president of the United States, the Republican president of the United States, wrote a letter back to him and to say the following. He said, to attain any success, it is quite clear that the federal government cannot avoid. Now, his brother had been saying the federal government should be doing nothing but having the army, which was the Republican mantra, the conservative mantra. So Dwight Eisenhower says, to attain any success, it is quite clear that the federal government cannot avoid or escape responsibility, which the mass of the people firmly believe should be undertaken by it. The political processes of our country are such that if a rule of reason is not applied in this effort, we will, and he's speaking to the Republican Party, we will lose everything. Actually, he's speaking to the whole nation, even to a possible and drastic change in the Constitution. This is what I meant by my constant insistence upon moderation in government. This is Dwight Eisenhower writing again to his brother, third year of his presidency. Should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you will not hear again of that party in our political history. There's a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them are H.L. Hunt, you possibly know of his background, a few other Texas oil millionaires, and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas, but their number is negligible and they are stupid. End of quote from the personal private letter that was written by Dwight Eisenhower to his brother Edgar on November 8, 1954. So the Republicans figured out they were not ready to embrace supply-side economics. They were not ready to go whole hog with deregulation because they saw what happened under Herbert Hoover when it was embraced. Eisenhower wasn't willing to do it. Nixon wasn't willing to do it. Jerry Ford wasn't willing to do it. So how did it get sold under Ronald Reagan? With Jude Winiski's two Santa Clauses. All the details right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program here on Air America Radio. By the way, we're having a bit of a telephone glitch in New York, so we're going to route our phone calls through our board here in Portland, Oregon today. So if you want to call into the show for today only, we're going to have a different telephone number, and I will give you that phone number in just a moment, give you a moment to get a pen and write it down, because if you don't live in Portland, you're probably not familiar with it. This is the number that we use for the AM 620 KPOJ morning show. And we figured out how to get it into our mix here so that you can call into the program if you would like with your thoughts. And that number is 866-452-0620. 866-452-0620. And Sue, in our chat room, if you could write that down and post it on our blog, on our homepage at tomhartman.com so that people can easily find it, I would much appreciate it. Excuse me. Our phone number once again, 866-452-0620, if you'd like to call into the show. And Sean will be picking up your calls. I see people are already, in fact, the lines are already lighting up. In fact, they're already lit. So, but let me just wrap up this riff, and then we'll take your thoughts on this. Here's the point. The Republicans knew for a long, long time they could not sell this idea of tax cuts for the rich, increasing taxes on the working people, and carving up government, getting rid of things like Social Security. They understood that getting rid of Social Security, as Dwight Eisenhower said, getting rid of Social Security was going to be death to them. And so Jude Winiski in 1974 came up with this idea. He called it the two Santa Clauses theory. Democrats, he said, were able to be Santa Clauses by giving people money from the government, basically like Social Security. But he said Republicans could be the double Santa Clauses by, A, going along with that, passing out a lot of government money and a lot of government jobs. And you'll notice the government increased faster under Ronald Reagan than it had outside of times of war, than it had under any other president in the history of the United States, and faster under George W. Bush than it did under Reagan. So they got to be Santa Clauses by passing out government largesse, number one. And number two, they got to be Santa Clauses, the Republicans got to be Santa Clauses, by cutting taxes. Now, the tax cuts on average working people were kind of a joke. I mean, you know, here's $100, here's $200, that kind of thing. They were very small, but they were marketed relentlessly because they were the key to getting people to accept, politically accept the idea of multi-billion dollar tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. And so this was in the 70s. This was 74 and 76. In 1974, Jude Winiski invented the term, literally invented the phrase supply-side economics. And the next year, Alvin Laffer came along. Laffer came along with his Laffer curve, saying, "See here, we can prove this." Did it on the back of a napkin, famously. And in 76, Winiski came up with a way to sell it—the two Santa Claus theory. He said, "We're going to promote this as a two Santa Claus theory." And Reagan, Greenspan, Winiski, Laffer—they took the federal budget deficit from under $1 trillion in 1980 to almost $3 trillion by 88. And back then, of course, the dollar was worth a lot more. They and George Herbert Walker Bush ran up more debt in 8 years than every president in history from George Washington to Jimmy Carter combined. And their belief, and David Stockman laid this out, is that this would starve the beast. This would kill off the government. It would make it impossible for the Democrats to spend money. This would starve the beast and make it work. The Democrats would then have to make the politically suicidal move of becoming deficit hawks. In other words, the Democrats would have to raise taxes and cut government spending. They'd have to shoot both Santa Clauses. And in fact, that's just what happened. Bill Clinton, who ran on an FDR platform of the new covenant, of building America, building this new covenant with America. That was the platform on which Bill Clinton ran. Could not govern on that. Because of what the Republicans had done. A few weeks after his inauguration, Greenspan and Rubin sat him down, told him the facts of life. He's going to have to raise taxes and cut the size of government. Clinton took their advice. He raised taxes. He balanced the budget. He cut numerous programs. He declared an end to welfare as we know it. And in his second inaugural address, he said, "This is an end of the era of big government." He was the anti-Santa Claus. And guess what happened? The Republicans started winning again because they were out there saying, "No, no, we're going to be the Santa Clauses." See, it's not the reality of the economics, it's the perception of the reality of the economics. You're looking at the wreckage of the Democratic Party all around Clinton by 1999. Jude Winiski wrote a gloating memo that said, quote, "We, of course, should be indebted to Art Laffer for all time for his curve, but as the primary political theoretician of the supply-side camp, I'm the one who began arguing for the two Santa Claus theory in 1974. If the Democrats are going to play Santa Claus by promoting spending, the Republicans can never beat them by promoting less spending. They have to promise tax cuts." The president of the Cato Institute, the libertarian group, Ed Crane, that same year, in 1999, as the two Santa Claus theory was working, Bill Clinton took the bait. He took it hook, line, and sinker. He killed the Santa Clauses. And the Republicans were out there. And so Ed Crane writes this memo. He says, when Jack Kemp, Newt Gingrich, Vin Weber, Connie Mack, and the rest discovered Jude Winiski and Art Laffer, they thought they'd died and gone to heaven. In supply-side economics, they found a philosophy that gave them a free pass out of the debate over the proper role of government. Just cut taxes and grow the economy. Government will shrink as a percentage of GDP, even if you don't cut spending. That's why you rarely, if ever, heard Kemp or Gingrich call for spending cuts, much less the elimination of programs and departments. End quote. From Ed Crane, president of the Cato Institute. So they didn't cut the programs. They didn't want to be the ones to kill the Santa Claus. They let Bill Clinton do it. And it destroyed the Democratic Party to a large extent. The Republicans came back into power. So anyhow, let's take some calls on this and get into the conversation about it. Our number, 866-452-0620. Mark in Martinez, California. Let's see how this thing works. Hey, Mark, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Great. And I hear you, too. What's up?
I wanted to thank you very much for the Eisenhower quotes. And if you have time, just give that again, maybe where we can get that on the web.
Sure. You can actually, you could probably very easily Google it by Dwight Eisenhower, 1954, letter Edgar, and maybe the word stupid, because that's a word that Eisenhower didn't use very often, but he used it in that letter.
Right.
But it's fairly easy to Google. It's a fairly famous letter now.
Oh, thanks. Ever since 1980, I saw it was happening too. But you know, I was just working class and had a family, and you know, there's about five people at work that over the years I converted, just because I explained to them that this was not a working class program.
Right.
What was going on? And they finally pretty much said, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what's so amazing is that this weekend on Meet the Press, there was John Boehner, on Meet the Press once again trying to say, no, we're both Santa Clauses. We want to cut taxes for everybody, and we want to have these spending programs. We want to make sure that they're going to be safe. You know, not too much spending, of course, but, you know, but let the Democrats, you know, and he's trying to force Obama into killing both. Well said, Mark. Thank you very much for the call. He's trying to force Obama into killing both Santa Clauses, and Obama is not taking the bait the way Clinton did. I think it's wonderful. Scott in Grand Rapids. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, I think we're political pawns between both parties.
I won't disagree with that.
But
let me add to this, Scott. If we want to stop that, if we don't want to be victims, then the way to do it is to get politically active. And just sitting around and complaining about it ain't going to do a thing.
I'm documenting only locally. I don't have access to the federal papers.
Mm-hmm.
But, Tom, you're a great man. I met you briefly here when you came to Grand Rapids at the Union Hall, and I listened to you faithfully, and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate the call. 866-452-0620, our telephone number for the day. Damon in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Damon, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine, but I'll get better. How about you?
Oh, me too, I guess. Every day is better.
You betcha.
So my whole, I listen to you every day. I listen to the whole spectrum, you know, in the morning and then in the afternoon. And everyone is saying this stuff. Everyone is saying that this Republican kind of economic theory just does not work. And it just seems to me that it makes so much sense that what's actually going on is the way the Republicans cling to power is not because of their economic theory, but because of because they attach the right-wing Christian agenda to it. And that's why that kind of middle Bible Belt area votes for them and lets them do the stuff. And it has nothing to do with their economics. It has to do with their issues on abortion and all and gay rights and all of those things.
Well, that's part of the coalition they've formed. But here's what's so ironic about it is that Republican economics is anti-Christian. It's anti-Jesus. Jesus, you know, in Matthew 25, he famously, you know, his disciples said, how do we get to heaven? And he said, you know, he said, those people who are going to go to heaven are those people who fed me when I was hungry, who gave me water when I was thirsty, who visited me when I was in prison, who clothed me when I was naked, who housed me when I was homeless. And they were freaked out. They said, wait a minute, we've never seen you hungry or naked or thirsty or in prison. And he said, as you do to the least of these, my brethren, you've done unto me. Right. That's Christian economics. That's Democratic Party economics. And the Republicans, ironically, and you pointed out the irony of it so brilliantly, the Republicans have created this coalition by trying to bring Christians into the fold with anti-Christian economic policies. amazing. It's the two Santa Clauses.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
So there's going to have to be some more discussion about this. Which is healthy? Which is positive?
Noon to 3.
And I think that we as lefties have got to make sure we know how to embrace all this stuff.
He calls them the way he sees them.
Just because Pelosi and Obama may disagree on the timing of the repealing of the Bush tax cuts doesn't mean that it's nuclear war.
The Ed Schultz Show.
There's going to be more than enough stuff to talk about.
Noon to 3. AM 620 KPOJ. Online at 620KPOJ.com.
Worried about losing your home? Is your bank threatening to foreclose? Well, there's hope. Operation Hope, America's leading financial literacy and empowerment nonprofit. If you're facing mortgage payment challenges, we just may be able to help. Get free, reliable information and guidance by calling the Operation Hope Mortgage Hotline at 888-388-HOPE. That's 888-388-4673. Look, don't lose your home just because you didn't pick up the phone. Make that call today or visit us at operationhope.org.
What happened to those long summer days? Sunsets are coming earlier and nights are getting cooler. More lights are turned on, more thermostats turned up. This fall and winter, Oregonians will experience energy cost increases both at home and at the office. You can prepare now to use energy more wisely. At Energy Trust of Oregon, it's our mission to help you do just that. Energy Trust offers cash incentives as well as a wealth of information that will help you become more efficient with your energy use at home and at work. Log on to energytrust.org to find tips and solutions for lowering your energy costs. And these aren't just your average turn-off some light suggestions. Energy Trust's cash incentives can help you when you install high-efficiency furnaces, heat pumps, water heaters, and insulation. It's a great time to make changes right now before the temperatures go down and the lights come on. Visit energytrust.org to learn more.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
Don't miss the 2009 Portland International Auto Show, February 5th through 8th at the Oregon Convention Center. The 2009 edition of the Auto Show features 33 different manufacturers and includes everything from luxury cars and convertibles to sports cars, hybrids, and economy cars. Check out the all-new 2009 models and get a sneak peek of selected 2010 intros and concept cars. Plus, you can enter to win a new vehicle courtesy of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, and the Metro Portland New Car Dealers Association. For more information, visit AM 620 KPOJ, keyword auto. Join AM 620 KPOJ at Ray Reese Hyundai, located at 1235 East Burnside Street in Portland, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Stop by the KPOJ booth and enter to win a brand new Nintendo Wii, courtesy of the Metro Portland New Car Dealers Association. And be one of the first five people to test drive a car, get a pair of tickets to the 2009 Portland International Auto Show.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Cause we're going fast, you can sit beside me when the world comes down. If it doesn't matter, then just turn around. We don't need our bags and we can just leave town. You can sit beside me when the world comes down.
9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here, hearing an echo in my own head.
What can we do better?
and I'm not sure why. Stephanie, you're feeding me an echo back on the ISDN line that I normally don't have. I'm gonna have to pop that down. Our phone number for the moment, 866-452-0620, and Greg in Margate, Florida. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to call you, with the issue of the tax cuts for people making over $250,000, coming up in 2010 and the big bickering. When you listen for the last year to Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, they talk with their own agenda. They both make, Tom, well over $1 million, especially O'Reilly with all the books.
Yeah. Actually, books don't pay all that much money, but O'Reilly's, O'Reilly's probably making, $5 million a year or more at Fox, and Hannity just signed a $200 million contract.
Right. Okay. So here's my point. We know that Bush tax cuts, you could correct me. Let's say they have, Tom, 35% of their salary reduced. And let's say under Obama, they're going to have 45% reduced. I would love to know why they can't, let's use O'Reilly. So if O'Reilly's going to take home now $3.2 million instead of $3.7 million, it means so much to him to hold on to that other $500,000. While other Democrats who make $1 million or $2 million, I'm sure you make over $250,000. You don't have any problem with Obama putting the tax cuts. I don't know why these Republicans are so selfish. And you can't live on $3.7 million?
Yeah. Well, and this used to be the prevailing philosophy in the United States, is that $3.2 million in today's dollars was where the 91% kicked in. It started at that point. So you could earn up to that point, and then you really started paying 91% income tax or 74% income tax after 1964 with LBJ. And the point was, hey, if you can't live on $3 million a year, you got a problem, and therefore the pie was bigger for everybody. And you're right, but it even goes beyond that, Greg. It goes beyond what people like O'Reilly or Hannity or me or anybody else can live on. It goes to the question of what's best for our society, because the fact of the matter is that when tax rates are low on people of great wealth. And the Hannitys of the world and beyond, I'm not in that category, but $200 million contract, but nonetheless, when taxes are very low on people earning enormous amounts of money, what happens is that they start using the money to make money. In other words, they go out into the investment market and you end up with a bubble economy. And that's, the bubble economy is exactly what we're experiencing right now. And this is what Dean Baker's book was about, although I read the entire book, and he never mentioned the impact of taxes on it. I think the taxes, personal income taxes are at the core of the whole thing. Because in the 1920s, when they dropped the top marginal tax rate down from 90% down to 25%, boom, you had a 10-year bubble economy. And then it blew up in 29. And then in 1980, when they dropped the top tax rate from 84%, or was it 74% down to 27%, boom, we had a series of bubble economies. So I think that's what it is. Steve in Burlington, Washington. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Talking about Boehner and Mitch McConnell, it seems like every time the Republican congressional folks want to talk about the economy, they trot out Mitt Romney as the talking head guy that they're standing behind. What's that all about? You've kind of hinted that he's the guy in...
Romney's going to be their nominee for president in 4 years. And, Romney's the guy. He's worth $400 million. He made most of it with Bain Financial and a couple of other companies that are, basically chop shops, buy companies, strip them of their assets, sell them off. It's the worst kind of capitalism, frankly, is what Romney has been doing. Thank you for the call, by the way. The very worst kind of capitalism is what Romney has been doing. And hopefully when he runs for president, that will become an issue. Americans will become economically sufficiently sophisticated that they'll get it, that they'll understand what's going on. I think it's an important one. Javier in Miami, Florida. Hey, Javier, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I love your show. Listening for about 3 years now. I tell you, I've learned a lot by listening to you.
Thank you.
And I also like the fact that you're very fair. I mean, as far as your callers, it doesn't matter if they're Republican, Democrat, independent, which I am. You always listen to them and you let them express their point of view. Along those lines, I wanted to know if there's a book out the same name as yours. It's called Cracking the Code. It's by Peter Eric Hendrickson.
Yeah, about taxes. He's talking about cracking the tax code. Yeah, yeah, I am familiar with it. You can't copyright a book title. So, you know, there's a bunch of books out that have the same titles.
Right. No, my thing was, is would you consider bringing him on your show as a speaker? He's on another station called the Power Hour.
Hmm. Let me check out his book, Javier. I don't know anything about it, so I'll have to check out his book first. John in Los Osos, California. Hey, John, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. One thing I wanted to point out, if we have our discussions with some of our Republican friends, is we'll never be able to convince them that their economic policies are wrong, because if we keep referring to it and they refer to it as Reaganomics, they'll never let go of that because, you know, Reagan is their patron saint. So it's almost like you have to reapproach it, and it's sort of like the neocons will never let go of Bush being the great president and all that. And there's plenty of Republicans, I think, that have come around and they've seen the light. But what I'm saying is that the Reaganomics that we've been used to for so long, you know, we almost have to come up with a different discussion and call it something different, because it doesn't work, and they'll never let go of it because of their ideas about Reagan.
I think we need to expose it. I think we need to point out that it's based on a fraud, the two Santa Clauses theory.
Right.
It's based on a fraud that doesn't work, that destroys countries, that destroys economies. It's the exact same fraud that was rolled out in the 1920s when it had a different kind of branding. It was more like, you know, prosperity is just around the corner, peace and prosperity, all that kind of stuff. World War I was over. Hey, it's a time of peace and prosperity. Now it's Reaganomics. No, it's destroy your country-nomics. What we're seeing happening in Iceland right now, actually, I think if John McCain had been elected, we would be seeing happening in the United States within a year. And we still might, given all the enormous damage that has been done by these guys. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson: in matters of style, swim with the current. In matters of principle, stand like a rock. Carrie Lucas and I are often on opposite sides of principle, and I think we're both standing like rocks these days, it seems, more often than not. But Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's always a pleasure talking with you. You have, by the way, I should let people know, give you the proper intro, Vice President of Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. And we have called you in Vienna, Austria, right?
Yes.
Great. How's
it? Wonders of technology.
Yes. And how is it bitterly cold there? When I lived in Germany, this time of year was just about the coldest.
Yeah, but it actually hasn't been too bad. I wish we had a little more snow. It'd be fun to get the kids out sledding, but so far it's been actually pretty mild.
Yeah. Now, the issue one of the big issues over at the Independent Women's Forum right now is this Family Leave Act, the FMLA, and George Bush has just put a freeze on this thing, which apparently is actually going to take effect, and some folks are very concerned about that. Bush freezes, rule freeze, Bush, oh, that's chemical safety. Yeah, can't stop family leave change. But you wrote an op-ed suggesting that expanding the Family and Medical Leave Act and other government-mandated leave programs would be a problem. You want
to? Yeah, you know, I think we need to be careful here because, you know, one of the things that the Bush administration did, and I guess it's President Obama's administration is looking into whether or not to freeze the regulation or the new guidance from labor, is they've tried to clarify some of the specific ways in which FMLA works, because as we all know, when members of Congress pass laws, and then it's up to agencies to interpret them and to kind of set the way that the rules end up being implemented. And sometimes it can get awfully confusing. So it ends up being bad news for both employers and employees when they don't know exactly what the benefits are and how they're supposed to work. And as things get bigger, that's something, or as government becomes more involved in dictating exactly what employees and employers have to include in an employment contract, that could get more and more sticky. So, you know, whatever. That's kind of
broad, Carrie, but about the specifics, we're talking about the Family and Medical Leave Act. You're broadly opposed to it because I assume you think that it's going to be tough on business to be mandated.
I'm broadly opposed to it because I believe in freedom and freedom of contract. And I think it's important to remember, you know, there's all, whenever anybody talks about the Family Medical Leave Act or mandating benefits, they think of it from the terms of an employee who needs to take leave and they want to force an employer to provide that leave. And we can all understand the need of people to take time off from work. We all want people to have paid leave and all these benefits. But I think we need to remember that when what government regulations do and what a law dictating what employers must include in an employment contract, that's a big loss of freedom. That's making it illegal for me to offer or accept an offer of employment that doesn't contain whatever provisions they think I should have. So when we think about what family medical leave or some of the proposals that are out there, for example, to require employers to all provide up to 7 days of paid sick leave, or extending, making small business provide 12 unpaid weeks of leave for things like a birth of a child. That's making it illegal for me to have a job any other way. So it's reducing our freedom. It's reducing our.
So maybe we have different definitions of freedom, because you're living right now in a country where pregnant women get 8 weeks paid before their due date, 8 weeks paid after their due date, their full net pay during that period of time. They can take up to 2 years of maternity or paternity leave. They can split that time between either parent. They can split it back and forth. And they receive during that period of time from the government, not from the employer, a monthly support payment of S-5100. This must have been written before the euro became the currency of Austria. So they receive a monthly payment from the government, and employers are also required to rehire them in positions of equal pay and status before the leave period is over. It seems to me that that actually increases the freedom of individuals, because they know that having a baby isn't going to destroy their careers. And so, you know, in my definition of freedom, it's, you know, knowing that my life is going to go on without disaster is a piece of that.
Who's paying for that? Who's paying for your definition?
Well, we are all paying for that collectively. We are all paying for that. And I think that that's what – freedom isn't free, Carrie.
Well, but certainly when it comes to something like, you know, looking at a place like Austria or a lot of Europe, that's one of the reasons why they have a much smaller economy, and everyone is the national per capita is much lower than in the United States. There is a real trade-off between the number of jobs that are available and how much it costs to support those jobs.
But the unemployment rate in Austria is lower than it is in the United States, and I lived in the next country over.
But
just a serious question here, Carrie. You're right. The average Austrian or the average European, Western European, uses about one-seventh as much energy as the average American, and their standard of living, if you simply measure it by consumption, is arguably about half of what ours is. Some would say 60-70%. It's lower than ours. They have less stuff. Their houses are smaller. But I lived there for a year. You live there now. You look around you. Does it seem like people are less happy? Does it seem like their actual quality of life is any poorer than it is in the United States? It always seemed to me like it was, frankly, a little better.
I don't know if I can make a value judgment. There's a lot going on. Differences. It depends on where you live in the United States, based on how happy you think your neighbors are, and how you're going to measure that. And certainly, I don't believe by any stretch that just wealth is a appropriate measure for happiness. But I do think I think that this is an important question between two different definitions of freedom.
Yes.
I think that. In your definition, it's freedom from want, and you don't mind forcing others to pay for me to be free from want.
For all of us, to be fear and want, yes.
where I think that government is an agent of force, and that is that when government comes in and demands something, takes something from someone, that is a loss of freedom. So I think that's really what it comes down to.
But isn't government us?
Well, government is us, but I think that we all recognize, and why the founders recognize, that we don't just have a majority rule, but we have a respect for the minority and a government that supposedly, once upon a time, had limited powers and a limited role to play.
Well, if we have a respect for the minority, then the government is going to intervene to protect that minority so that they can be free of fear from want or fear, and that minority, in this case, is pregnant mothers.
No, but it also should be free from taking my property and using it for something that I don't support. It's freedom from forcing me to support other people if I don't want to. And that's, I think that's an important, defending the taxpayer is also often a minority in this case. It's just as important to protect somebody's property, which again, the right to own property and not have your money seized by the government is an important right. So I do think that it represents an illegitimate or questionable something. It's worth debating what the proper role of government is in terms of taking our money and forcing us to pay for anything.
Well, this has been, the debate of the definition of freedom literally from the founding of this country, and it continues to this day. And I think that, we've both pretty clearly defined our understandings of those positions, and in the minute that we have left, can you give me, I give you as an example, the country where you're living right now, Austria. I've spent a lot of time in Austria. It's a wonderful place, and people have a good standard of living there, and they have free health care and, good family medical leave. Can you give me any country in the world where there is very little government, very little regulation, and the quality of life is anything close to what you see in Western Europe?
No, I only dream of once again returning to a United States that respects respects the rights of the individual and has limited government. But Tom, before we close, I just wanted to say, I really do appreciate conversations like this, and I was really offended by President Obama's statement in his inaugural address that we need to put away childish things like discussions about the proper role of government, size and scope of government. And I hope that, I don't think you think it's childish, and I appreciate you having me on to debate those issues.
Well, thank you, Carrie. I'll disagree with you one more time. I don't think that was the context of his comment, but I do appreciate these dialogues, and I think that they're very instructive to our listeners on the right and on the left, and these are the kind of conversations America, I think, very, very much needs.
Let's hope so. As long as the freedom doctrine doesn't come in, then we can keep having
Hey, I'll be fine. I have right and left on this show. Carrie Lucas, IWF.org, the Independent Women's Forum. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Todd Davis, CEO of LifeLock, and what I'm about to tell you is true. My real Social Security number is 457-55-5462. You may think I'm crazy, but I know my identity is safe. At LifeLock, every member is covered by our $1 million total service guarantee.
Every 3 seconds, someone's identity is stolen. It's not just the money that's being stolen. It's your reputation, your credits, and your valuable time to fix the huge mess. At LifeLock, we aim to prevent identity identity theft before it happens. And if anything happens while you're a client of LifeLock, you'll be protected by our exclusive $1 million total service guarantee. With LifeLock, you'll also see a huge reduction in junk mail and pre-approved credit offers. Call 1-800-643-1385 right now and get 30 days of LifeLock for free. Protect yourself and your family from identity theft. And when you call right now, get 30 days free. Call now, 1-800-643-1385. That's 1-800-643-1385. Again, 1-800-643-1385.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself. So there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
So my little brother, who runs his own business, tells me, the holy grail in business is your customer's email. So I'm like, okay, but how can you, Mr. No Creative Bone in Your Body, do something snazzy like email marketing? And he goes, ConstantContact.com. You know, if I'd have known he'd be this successful, I totally would have given him the top bunk.
ConstantContact.com. Email marketing with tons of easy-to-use, professional-looking templates so you can be as creative as you want. Get a free 60-day trial and free live phone support at ConstantContact.com.
And now for the bonus round. John's uncle's cousin's mother's friend is what relation to John?
Curmudgeon.
Correct. How many ounces are in an anagram?
8.26.
Correct. How much do Netflix members pay in late fees?
Nothing!
Correct! Netflix. Choose your movies online and have DVDs delivered in about one business day. No late fees ever. Start your free trial today. Netflix.
See terms of use.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Store Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Sunger.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit card.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the No Boring Zone. Fox shows photos of Muslim men and says, would you want a guy like this living in your backyard? No. This is the new meme. If they shut down Guantanamo, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is going to live in your backyard. Yeah. Yeah. These guys are so, they're scaredy cats. Sean Hannity, that's somewhat frightening. You're going to close Guantanamo Bay? You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what they're going to do with these, where they're going to put these people. Oh, poor Sean. Poor terrified Sean. We need to send him security blankets. You know, we can send him some of those old Peanuts cartoons where he can learn how to suck his thumb and hold a security blanket and feel safe. Glenn Beck, somebody told me that if this goes through, we put 200 people into this system, it will shut down our justice system. Our justice system just won't be able to do it. Oh, poor Glenn. Glenn Beck, I'm so sorry for you. You poor, terrified little man. I know, you know, you converted to Mormonism to try to, and God bless you getting sober. You know, I do think that that's a fine thing. And you know, to try to put your life in order and get over your terrors and your fears. But, you know, maybe you should get a security blanket, too. And Brian Kilmeade, you know, we're talking about the worst of the Taliban, the worst of Al-Qaeda. We have to let him go? Give him trials? Yeah, Brian, it's the American thing to do, you know? I mean, it's just the American thing to do. Our calls, by the way, we're taking calls on a non-normal number. we're call screening here out of Portland, Oregon. 866-452-0620 is our telephone number. 866-452-0620. And David in Qingdao, China. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. It's a great honor for me to be one little fiber in the web of the tapestry of your background and what I'm really honored.
Well, thank you. I'm so pleased that you're listening to us in Qingdao, China, and that our show is not blocked by the Chinese government, apparently.
Well, it is. I'm listening online. I have I'm streaming, I guess, mm-hmm. through Nova.
Uh-huh. Oh, great. Yeah, through Nova.
And we have some connections. I was born in Tecumseh, Michigan, just southwest of Detroit.
Yep.
So, and I, you know, some of the things that you've been talking about tonight, it's just like, it's amazing. I lived in Iceland while I was stationed there, in and out of there for better part of 3 years when I was in the United States Navy. The lady in you just talked to in Austria, mm-hmm. you know, standing up for her views on what freedoms are and whatever. But I marched out of Hyde Park, I think, in 1976 with a unionist movement. I was really impressed when they were demanding equal pay for women in education and
yep.
teachers.
Yep. It's true, and it's good stuff. David, you know, I appreciate your calling us all the way from China. What was the point that you wanted to make or the question that you had?
Well, I told the screener it's more a complimentary thing. I'm just happy that you're there. I left the United States 4 years ago in self-imposed exile in protest of the tyranny of Bush, and you've sustained and supported me along with Mike Malloy and Randy Rhodes and whatever, and it's just a call to say thank you.
Well, thank you very much, David. I appreciate it, and thank you for taking the time to call us all the way from China and for listening there in the what time of the day is it now? You said the evening?
We are right now 13 hours ahead of you. We will be, and it's Chinese New Year here, or it would be, so if we have some Chinese listeners, Gong Fi Cha Tai. Gong Fi Fa Chai is Happy New Year.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, David. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Armin in Florida. Hey, Armin, how was it? Louise is screening our calls again after all these years. She said, hey, I heard Armin.
Hey, I appreciate it.
That's great.
How you doing, brother?
Just great. You used to call our show for our listeners. We will have been on the air 7 years in March, and we will be beginning our seventh year. And Armin was one of our very first callers and a real regular on the show way back then when we were doing our show at our home in Vermont, and we were on the iAmerica radio network on Sirius Satellite and about 30 other stations. And it's great to. So, Armin, we got a minute before the break at the bottom of the hour. What's on your mind?
Well, let me cover a couple points, if I may. But I think the biggest problem that we confront is the power of the media consolidation. And one of the examples of that power is repeat after me, if you would, please. Okay? Sex, sports, suds. And sensationalism seduces suckers.
That's a good one. That's a good one. That's one of those ones, if you say it three or four times real fast, it probably comes out of scene. But, yeah.
Well, you do have a point. But I call it the six S's.
Yeah.
And what they do, I study, I listen to you a lot. You're an excellent teacher, and I think you're doing very well.
Thank you, Armin.
And,
we've got to wrap it up. I'm sorry, but thank you so much for your kind words. And you, I think your point of the six S's was brilliant. You should write an op-ed piece on it, because it really is. It's the dumbing down of the media and in our schools. I mean, we don't teach civics anymore. What kind of tragedy is that? We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Four minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. We've got two phone numbers you can call today, 866-452-0620 or 866-303-2270. And Gary in Connecticut. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show. Gary? Gary?
Can you hear me? Oh, hey, I had a question, and this is on the Federalist. And I hear Republicans constantly bringing up the Federalist Papers, yeah, and trying to sound smart by saying them. Am I misunderstanding what these papers exactly are, that these papers actually were, in essence, a set of papers describing why we needed more individual rights for the people and to give the federal government more power and to keep the states a little bit more repressed so that they wouldn't take individual rights, which is pretty much what the Democrats are today. So when the Republicans actually are saying the Federalists, they're the Federalists today would be the Democrats of today, and the Anti-Federalists would actually be the Republicans of yes, or the Republicans.
No, you're mixing apples and oranges, Gary. Set aside the Federalist Papers for just a moment, okay?
Okay.
Because they had nothing to do with the Federalists, or very little to do with the Federalists. The Federalists came into being as a party during the administration, during the tail end of the administration of George Washington. And up until that point, there were no parties. And in fact, Madison, when they were trying to sell the Constitution in 1787, 88, and it was ratified in 1789, it was written in 1787, when they were trying to sell the Constitution, there were no political parties, and he didn't want there to be. Federalist number 10, which I'll get to in a second, was begging people not to form political parties. But anyhow, they did form the Federalist Political Party, and today's Republicans are the heirs to the Federalist Party. The Anti-Federalist Party that was formed by Jefferson, the original Federalist Party was formed by and large by people like John Marshall, who was the first U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice. He was a cousin of Jefferson's and a political enemy of Jefferson's. John Adams, some of the other conservatives of the day. That's the Federalists. But the Federalist Papers had nothing to do with the Federalist Party. The Federalist Papers were the Constitution was written in 1786 behind closed doors in secret. And in fact, Madison kept the notes of that, and he made an agreement with everybody in the room that he would keep them secret for 50 years or until everyone died. And in 1836, when he was an old man, after he was president, he started writing his notes on the notes, in other words, an introduction to them, and he died before he finished it. But they were published after he died, which was the deal. And it turns out that the reason why he kept it secret was because these guys were betraying their own class. Many of them were wealthy people, and they wrote a constitution that was designed to protect average working people and to limit the power of government to protect wealth. And that's why they kept it secret. But the Federalist Papers were James Madison and Alexander Hamilton. And Hamilton, by the way, ultimately became a bit of a conservative, but he was a hero in this case. Alexander Hamilton and John Adams, and John Jay wrote a couple of them, but most of them were Adams and Madison. I said Adams again. Take Adams out of there. James Madison and Alexander Hamilton wrote a series of a little more than 80 newspaper articles, and they ran in newspapers around the country over the course of the 2 years, mostly in 1787, 1788. And they were trying to sell people on the idea of ratifying the Constitution, because there's a huge debate about whether we should just continue under the Articles of Confederation or whether we needed a new Constitution. And so reading the Federalist Papers, and I encourage you to, they're fascinating. Most of them are relatively short. Most of them are, you know, 2-3 pages long, and each one deals with one particular topic or argument or debate. And what the Federalist Papers laid out was the vision that that Madison and Hamilton, and basically before there were political parties, that the founders had for America. And they're brilliant. They're beautiful. And you really get, you know, the sense of what the debate was and what the discussion was. But it had nothing to do with the Federalist Party. The Federalist Party was, you know, emerged in after the Constitution had been ratified. And after the Constitution was ratified, we officially became a country in 1791, and Washington was elected. And during that first Washington administration, the Federalist Party emerged, and then Jefferson started the Anti-Federalists, who he then changed the name to. He thought being anti was a bad thing, changed it to the Democratic Republicans, and then in the 1820s, they dropped the word Republican from the name. The Republican Party, the modern Republican Party, didn't even exist until a decade before the Civil War, 1856. Makes sense, Gary?
Wow. That's I've learned more there than I ever did in any history class I ever took.
Okay. Well, listen, let me encourage you. Google the Federalist Papers. You can find them online. And just, you know, just once a week, you know, spend a half hour reading just any old random Federalist paper, and you'll get such an insight into the day, into the time. You know, read the original sources rather than stuff like, you know, the Cato Institute or the other right-wing guys writing about them. There's some brilliant stuff. Gary, thank you very much for the call. Let's see here. We've got two different boards and Rod is it Tamaha, Texas? Rod, do I have the pronunciation?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Rod, I'm right here. What's up?
It's Tinaha.
Tinaha. Okay.
That's an Indian word. How are you doing today, Tom?
Just great. How are you, Rod?
Tom, I'm having a blessed day. I'm a first time caller. I listen to your show every day on the internet and everything. I was calling in regards to the lady's comment from Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been reading on the net. A lot of people have taken that out of context. He was quoting 1 Corinthians, you have to put away your childish things.
Yes, yes, Barack Obama was.
Yes, I'm 35, my wife is 29, and we have 3 kids, and we have a new home. I am a diehard liberal, and I've had to put away my childish things, you know, like, I may want to buy a new boat or something, but, you know, I'm putting my daughters in private school.
Right.
You know, I just think people take that out of context.
Yeah, it was. I think it was a call to responsibility, and I think it was also an opportunity and a very elegantly done one to quote scripture in an inaugural address.
It most certainly was. Another thing, when you're talking about Glenn Beck and O'Reilly,
mm-hmm.
and how they're shutting down Guantanamo.
Yeah.
How do you think those guys would feel if they went to a country that didn't have habeas corpus and they were locked up?
Yeah.
You know?
They would be even more terrified than they are right now. Rod, well said. Thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Woody in Litchfield, Arizona. Hey, Woody, what's on your mind today?
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you, Tom. that was earlier on in the discussion about taxes, and yet I'd offer to the woman you were speaking with about freedom is that in our Constitution, as equal to provide for the common defense, is provide for the general welfare.
Right.
But in that, and I think I'm a pretty good progressive, but I think I'd be a heretic in the Democratic Party because I believe that the wage taxes of Social Security and Medicare are unconstitutional because we have income by the 16th Amendment and then per capita and excise tax in the original body. And I, as a federal employee, do not pay Social Security, but I do pay Medicare. And so my W-2 highlights the differences between what's considered income and what are considered wages.
Right.
I used to have a farm and a business, and so I filed Schedule C's and Schedule F's. And the deductions for operating those enterprises versus what I do as an individual are vastly different. And I really believe that, you know, to help stimulate the economy, if we start going on income taxes and then we'd leave the corporations and the ones that rent money out to fight amongst themselves and leave us out of it would be helpful.
Yeah. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Woody, the main argument that is made that income taxes are unconstitutional is that the 16th Amendment, which was ratified on February 3rd, 1913, was actually not – they were actually one state short of the 3/4 of the states necessary for ratification, and they went ahead in the middle of the night and ratified the thing on the floor of Congress anyway. Is that the argument that you're making?
Yeah, and yet I still think there's value in the income tax. Again, to get those people that are making money off the backs of others to pay right. their fair share, yeah. and that's the difference between wages and income to me.
Yeah, I understand, and thank you, Woody, for raising that. I'm not sure. I don't pretend to be a scholar on the 16th Amendment, and I've heard both sides. I have heard that there is a good and accountable history that it actually wasn't ratified, and of course the IRS will tell you no. In fact, it was ratified, and it is the law. And I would suspect that if you don't pay your taxes, you'll discover very quickly that the government considers it the law. Donna in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Donna, we got a minute before the break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Real quick, just two things. One, on a humorous note, mm-hmm. didn't Cheney at the inauguration look like in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, old man Potter with his wheelchair and his scowl and his glasses?
Oh, yeah. He reminded me of the in Spy versus Spy, the spy with the black hat, you know,
right.
that kind of hat. By the way, on our website, we put a picture, a little clip from a larger picture of you can see where I'm standing relative to these guys. I mean, it was I was the closest reporter to Obama and to Cheney and Bush of any of them. It was amazing what Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service was able to pull off on that.
It's wonderful.
I'm so grateful to her.
Why isn't anybody in Congress or the Obama administration talking about our trade policies, the NAFTAs and CAFTAs? That hasn't seemed like it's under the discussion regarding our economic policy.
Because it's nitroglycerin. When they start dealing with that stuff, and they're going to have to, in my opinion, if we're going to have, and Donna, thank you for the call. I think that for us to have any kind of economic, serious, long-term, structural economic recovery, we've got to stop using monetary policy, that is strengthening or weakening the dollar, in order to affect our trade policy, and go back to what we had for 200 years in this country, was an actual industrial trade policy. But boy, is it going to be tough.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
What happened to those long summer days? Sunsets are coming earlier and nights are getting cooler. More lights are turned on and more thermostats turned up. This fall and winter, Oregonians will experience energy cost increases both at home and at the office. You can prepare now to use energy more wisely. At Energy Trust of Oregon, it's our mission to help you do just that. Energy Trust offers cash incentives as well as a wealth of information that will help you become more efficient with your energy use at home and at work. Log on to EnergyTrust.org to find tips and solutions for lowering your energy costs. And these aren't just your average turn off some light suggestions. Energy Trust's cash incentives can help you when you install high-efficiency furnaces, heat pumps, water heaters, and insulation. It's a great time to make changes, right now before the temperatures go down and the lights come on. Visit EnergyTrust.org to learn more.
Go to 620kpoj.com, keyword coupon, to save from local businesses like the UPS Store and West Hills Dental Center. Two UPS Store locations are offering free domestic ground shipping of one package 5 pounds or less. Certain restrictions apply. This coupon is only valid at specified UPS Store locations. Print the coupon for details. How about a new dentist or a second opinion? Print out a complimentary dental consultation from West Hills Dental Center. For these great deals and more, go to 620kpoj.com, keyword coupon, or look for the link in your KPOJ loyal listener update.
What if there were a way to guarantee your money from taking a loss in this volatile economy? Hi, I'm Blake Kingsley of Oregon Equity Management. Fact, my clients haven't lost a dime in this market because their money is protected by state and federal regulations. Folks, if you want to stop the bleeding, call me today to learn how you too can protect your money, guaranteed. Blake Kingsley, 503-686-8423. That's 686-8423 today.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I don't know how to talk like a parent. Don't make me come back there. You see what I mean? It's pretty awful. Try it again. Don't make me come back there. Now that's pretty good. That one kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Taking back to mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Ellen Ratter with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Great news source on the line with us and accredited pretty much everything, White House, Pentagon, Congressional, UN reporter. Hey, Ellen.
Well, the good news or the bad news? You got to tell me what you want first.
Well, first I want to tell you that just a minute ago I was plugging you and singing your praises on the air because we put up a clip of a photo that shows where I was standing. It's on TomHartman.com. That shows where I'm standing relative to Barack Obama. And because of your efforts, of the entire National Press Corps, I am standing closer to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Barack Obama than any other reporter, except arguably you, because you were standing right next to me to my left. And
you're taller than me, so you got to see more.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm standing there holding your video camera, actually, in the photo. So I was singing your praises. Anyhow,
You something, Tom. You got a lot of grief from some of the other shows on it, and I said, hey, you know, well, we're connected to Tom. What can I say?
Yeah, well, thank you, Ellen. So the bad news first.
The bad news is the Supreme Court came up with two very bad decisions today, and they came up with one that wasn't too bad. The first one that says they ruled unanimously. This means even the liberals on the court. The police officers have leeway to search a passenger car stop for traffic violation, even if nothing indicates that the passenger has engaged in a crime or intends to. This overturned an Arizona lower appeals court that had thrown out evidence. A man was stopped by a local police department. They found a gun and marijuana, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote that pat-downs are permissible when the officer has reasonable suspicion that the passenger may be armed and dangerous. Give me a break.
So the Fourth Amendment takes another kick in the teeth, basically. Was this
unanimously?
Unanimously.
And another unanimous decision. Wow. A man was wrongly convicted. This is Vandekamp versus Goldstein. A man was wrongly convicted. He spent 24 years in prison. And they said he may not sue the former Los Angeles district attorney for violating his civil rights. The justice has said that decisions of supervising prosecutors are shielded from civil lawsuits. It's shocking.
Yeah.
We may have a new president, but we need a new Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think so. That would have been a good opportunity to overturn a long precedent of a position with which I agree with many conservatives, which is that in order to sue the government, you have to have the government's permission. And I think you should just be able to sue the government.
Well, there is that 1983 or 1984 statute. That wasn't the year it was written, but that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And that allows if a federal worker or somebody interferes with your individual rights, you may sue them personally. Mm. I just don't understand how this doesn't apply, but I'm not an attorney.
Yeah. Interesting. So okay. What else is going on in the world?
Good news. Well, first of all, President Obama sent George Mitchell to the Middle East. I don't know if you've ever had my cousin on the show. Aaron Miller wrote The Much Too Promised Land. He was a Mideast peace negotiator for 25 years, left under this Bush, the most recent Bush, because he just felt that they weren't doing anything. Mm-hmm. And it's very nice to know that Mitchell is going in the first week. So that's pretty good news.
Mm-hmm.
The president also did something unusual for a president. He actually stood up in the East Room and he said, over the last few days, we've learned that Microsoft, Intel, United Airlines, Home Depot, Sprint, Nextel, and Caterpillar are each cutting thousands of jobs. These are not just numbers on a page. He's the first president. President Bush did not start listing companies. He did not hold their feet to the fire. He did not talk about what they were going to do. President Obama has done that. In addition, the fact he outlined some of his green energy thing today, and he said that he was directing the Environmental Protection Agency to review the denial of the California waiver request, and the best way to move forward. This has to do with the CAFE standards. He said that they want to get new standards for the model year 2011,
mm-hmm.
because that's not very far at all away.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to lay 3,000 miles of transmission lines to deliver energy to every corner of our country. He said it's going to save taxpayers $2 billion a year. If I'm sounding a little whatever, I just went to the dentist. And he wants to make 75% of federal buildings more fuel efficient.
Yeah, all admirable things, and a lot of this stuff that can hit the ground right now. One of the things that I hope is a big piece of this is money for the CAP programs, the community action programs. My friend Hal Cohen in Vermont runs the Central Vermont Community Action Program and has for a couple of decades. And these are some of the most lean and mean, effective, incredible. You know, you give them the money, they hit the ground running, they can ramp up immediately, and they do a lot of the weatherization stuff. They do programs to support low-income people. They do job re-education. They do all kinds of things, huge scope of things, and enormous block grant, chunk of cash for the community action programs, in my opinion, would be one of the most stimulative and helpful, long-term helpful things that could possibly come out of this administration. Do you know if that's going to be a part of this stimulus package, Ellen?
We haven't really seen the details. Actually, Steny Hoyer tomorrow morning is having a pen and pad, which I intend to go to. I think we'll get a little more information out of that.
Well, ask him about CAP, would you?
I will, and I will also say that if I remember, when I was running a community program in the 70s, we got CETA money under Carter, and it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act. I was talking about that a couple of days ago when Louise and I were running the New England Salem Children's Village back in from 78 to 83. We had CETA employees, and it was great. You got people who were unemployed. They came in. We taught them skills, and they went off and got jobs. You know,
ultimately. Well, you know what's interesting is that two of the people that we trained in the CETA program in the 70s are still working at South Shore Mental Health Center in Quincy, Massachusetts. Now,
that's great. Is
amazing.
Yeah, no, that's these the CETA, the Comprehensive Educational and Training Administration or Act, as I recall, one or the other. CETA really did work. I mean, that was an investment in human capital. It didn't involve college or anything. It was a workplace. It helped. It was only available for nonprofits like yours and mine, and it worked really well. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks so much for coming by, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great, great talking with you, as always. Coming up next, Philip K. Howard is going to tell us how lawyers bad without lawyers. What? Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby.
This is Tom Hartman, better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And hold on for just a second. I'm not finding what I'm looking for. Anyway, here we have Philip K. Howard is with us on the line. PhilipKHoward.com is his website. He's the author of a new book, Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law. This morning he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, which you can read over at WSJ.com, how modern law makes us powerless, and also the author of the book, The Death of Common Sense. A book, his new book, endorsed by Bill Bradley, Newt Gingrich, Michael Bloomberg, Derek Bach, quite a variety there. Philip Howard, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you with us. You know, it seemed to me that about, 20-30% of your book dealt with legal abuses and legal absurdities, and certainly it's easy to come up with a catalog of frivolous lawsuits and things like that. And about two-thirds of it dealt with the whole idea of what is the role of government and how do we define freedom, and which is, in my opinion, the core of your op-ed in this morning's Wall Street Journal, where you talk about the two components of freedom. And in that context, it seems to me that what you're arguing is entirely what used to be referred to and still is at law as negative freedoms, that is the freedom to operate free of interference from others, specifically in this case, interference by government, as opposed to what Franklin Roosevelt laid out in his Four Freedoms speech, where he talked about that there are positive freedoms as well, In fact, let me just, it's only a minute or so. Let me just share a little bit of this with you and my listeners, if I may, and let's have a conversation about that if we can.
In the future days, which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world.
I think we're agreeing on that one.
Right.
The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world.
I think we're broadly agreeing on that one.
The third is freedom from want.
That's where
which
we're
translated into world terms means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear.
And then he goes on with that, freedom from fear. And that can be defined a number of ways, but the freedom from want, speak to that, Philip.
Yeah, it's just a question of how you define it. I think nobody in modern America would tolerate people starving to death. But on the other hand, if you have an accident on the playground and you want $10 million, maybe that's not the same thing. So, what's happened in modern America is that for all the right motivations, law became a vehicle for individual advancement or profit. Mm. And it certainly happened with litigation. And it's also become a way of people getting things out of government.
But the demand, well, first of all, it's damn hard to sue government, as the Supreme Court pointed out today.
Right.
But secondly, how do, if I have been harmed, I mean, it used to be that cribs were very often sold with bars in them that were far enough apart that babies strangled, and they regularly did. And right. Somebody sued, and they changed it. It used to be that cars, when you hit something, they'd blow up and people would burn to death. They'd cook, and somebody sued, and it got changed. I mean, what is wrong with a legal system that allows for that? How do I go up against General Motors if I don't have the right to sue them?
Well, first of all, there should be a right to sue. But lawsuits should be bounded by value judgments of what's a reasonable risk and what isn't.
Well, that's what we have courts for.
So it's very easy to conclude that, for example, that cars shouldn't be ticking time bombs or whatever, and that's partially the role of regulation and partially the role of litigation. But that requires a value judgment on behalf of society of what's a reasonable risk.
But see, that value judgment had been made. I mean, Ford Motor Company, as I recall, it might have been General Motors. It was either Chevy or Ford with the side-saddle trucks.
It was the Pinto. It was the Ford Pinto.
Well, I was thinking of the side-saddle trucks where they were looking at the gas tanks on those things. And for an extra $3, they could put a plastic liner in those gas tanks. And if somebody was hit on a side-end collision, the same thing happened with the Pinto. You're right. Mm-hmm. That was the one that Ralph Nader made famous.
Right.
And basically what they said is, you know, if we're going to have an extra 1,500 people die, we're going to pay out an average of $250,000 per lawsuit on those deaths, that's going to cost us less than it will cost us to make these cars fireproof.
So let's
just deal with those 1,500 people dying.
Well, it's easy to say that, but, I mean, I don't.
Well, that's what came out in court.
I don't represent a car company, but those analyses and a lot of liberal economists have looked at this include, you know, pick a number, 1,000 different parts. And if you did the same thing on every 1,000 part, all of a sudden the $20,000 car becomes a $40,000 car. So all I'm suggesting in this book is that for people to feel free, and I'm all for more authority and more regulation and everything, but it has to be reasonably clear. People need to know where they stand. And what's wrong with the jury-by-jury system is that one jury says, yes, it's okay, and then very next jury can say, no, it's not. And the next one can say, so you never know where you stand.
But the argument that you make for specialty courts, and I've read this in your book,
right.
The argument that you make, number one, frankly, I find kind of condescending. It's like, well, you know, juries are not all that sophisticated. We're going to let juries put people to death over criminal matters. We're going to let juries litigate all forms of other things. But, you know, in the case of medical or business or something, you know, we really need to have these expert courts and things.
Tom, it's not a question
I trust
of
the American people.
Tom, it's not a question of. It's not a question of being – juries generally get it right. But people need to know where – the problem with the jury is it doesn't have the authority to make the ruling stick. And so when you have inconsistent verdicts, what happens is you get a healthcare system where the doctors are paranoid because they're scared of the – as studies show, 2.5 out of 10 juries that end up doing the wrong thing. So you end up wasting tens or more billions of dollars because people don't trust the system of justice. It's really important for a system. The rule of law is all about the principle, to quote a philosopher, H.L.A. Hart, that like cases be decided alike. So I'm not – the jury – the role of the jury in a civil case has always been to decide disputed issues.
No, broadly, I don't disagree with that. But you know, the call – essentially what your book is supporting this idea of tort reform. And
that's absolutely inaccurate. That's
okay, then let me just pull that off the table altogether. I'll withdraw that statement.
Right.
Instead, let me your example of medical and you make the example in the book. For example, the doctors are ordering unnecessary tests.
Right.
In fact, if you look at the rise of quote unnecessary tests, or just the use of tests,
right.
And particularly the use of high tech things like MRIs and CAT scans,
doctors
like
make a lot of money on
they
it.
They don't track lawsuits. Instead, they track organizations becoming HMOs and doctors becoming partners in for-profit corporations that sell those tests. It's all about people making more money, not being defensive against lawsuits.
It's not either or, and so you're absolutely correct. There are mixed motives in all of this. And
but the major, one of the major connection, the major association is with people making profits in the medical industry.
You know, there's been a lot of studies by progressive scholars about defensive medicine. It is pervasive. It is motivated.
I'm not saying it doesn't
happen. Not completely. In substantial part by the distrust of justice. It's also motivated by a horrible bureaucracy that basically encourages doctors to do whatever they can get reimbursed for. And so you have all these mills where, as you suggest, where people give all these tests that are completely unnecessary.
Right, because they own the test and they own the mill and they're promoting their own tests.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's a fascinating topic. People can learn more about it over at philipkhoward.com. His new book, Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law. Philip, thanks for dropping by today.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Bye.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. We'll be right back, or 452-0620 if you're on the line. We'll pick up those calls, too.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Is your credit card debt out of control? Are you in over your head dealing with monthly payments? There's a powerful secret the credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe, cutting your payments by up to half or more. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt and lower your payments by up to half or more. It's yours free by calling 1-800-734-7203. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes, and we could save you thousands. Live better. Debt-free. Find out how easy it is by calling for this valuable free information. For the secret the credit card companies don't want you to know, call 1-800-734-7203. That's 1-800-734-7203. Call now, 1-800-734-7203.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evenings 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
Why get your dinner from the fast food window when you can make a real meal at home? With Stouffer's, you can make a delicious meal with real ingredients and no preservatives for as little as $2 a serving. Now that's a value menu.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
AM 620, KPOJ, and the Portland Police present Crime Stoppers, a public campaign against crime in the Northwest.
Portland Police hope you recognize the surveillance camera picture of an armed robber. The man, around 30 years old, loitered for an hour inside the Belmont Walgreens. Then he jumped the pharmacy counter in the back of the store, stuck a gun in the face of the pharmacist, then made off with a sack full of prescription medication, including oxycodone. The suspect is black, 6 feet tall, and heavy set. Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward of up to $1,000. Call 823-HELP. Or file a confidential report and look at the pictures of the crime at CrimeStoppersOfOregon.com.
If you have information about this or any other crime, call the Crime Stoppers hotline at 823-HELP, 823-HELP, and help slam the door on crime.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I said we'll be picking up your calls on the other side of the break. We will at the bottom of the hour. My apologies. Bob Baugh is with us. He is the executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council for our weekly labor segment here. AFLCIO.org, of course, the website. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Great to have you with us. According to TexUnite.org, the top 10 companies that have outsourced the most jobs are IBM at 63,000, EDS at 22,000, and these are and change, Dell at 17,000, Cognizant at 15,000, Siemens, GE, Convergys, Accenture, Computer Sciences Corp., and Intel, all in the ranges of 15,000 to 10,000. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes, it is. Now, we've lost 500,000 manufacturing jobs in this country in the last year, and those aren't just manufacturing jobs. It's also research and development and engineering and all the things that you need to be innovative in the future.
We had an industrial policy in the United States from 1791 until Reagan came into power and started dismantling it, and then, you know, it went into overdrive with NAFTA and GATT and the WTO and all that kind of thing. But we also had from 1935 with the passage of the Wagner Act, with a brief hiccup in 47 of Taft-Hartley, but again, up until Reagan came into office, we had a strong union movement in the United States that fought to keep good jobs in the United States. It seems to me, Bob Baugh, that the way to bring these jobs back is a combination of strengthening labor in the United States and stopping the idea of using monetary policy as a trade policy and going back to having a national industrial trade policy. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I share those thoughts with you. I mean, we are the only country trying to compete in a world, and every other country we deal with actually has a strategy. And
right.
Some of them, like China, do things that are illegal, and we'll go after them for that, and we need to do it more. But shame on us. We have no strategy, and it shows. That leads to bad trade policy. That leads to monetary policy driving our economy and the decisions that are being made in it, not looking at employment, not looking at our industrial base, not looking at our capacities and capabilities to compete in the future.
Yeah. Yesterday, Louise and I were having lunch at a locally owned nearby restaurant, and the owner came over and we were chatting, and he doesn't know what I do for a living, and all he knows me is, you know, as a regular customer. And we just, you know, said, how's business and how's, you know, and we were talking about that. And he said, well, you know, at least we're able to, you know, start exporting again as the dollar's getting weaker. And I said, yeah, but it's, impoverishing America, the dollar getting weaker, seems like a lousy way to have a trade policy that works. I mean, but so many Americans think that that's the way to do it. I'm astounded.
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think, one, there is a monetary policy in the world, a currency policy that really needs to be addressed. China manipulates theirs. A number of other nations emulate the behavior that creates an unfair trade advantage. At times, we've had such a strong dollar policy, it's also made it difficult. I think there's a balancing act that needs to occur there.
Yeah, but beyond that, I think we should go back to Hamilton's idea of appropriate tariffs for critical industries and nurturing young industries and you know, government support of industries.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big decision points here that we're reaching with the new energy policy is how do we make sure those investments are made in our domestic economy, the recovery package that's being considered in Congress. We are fighting very strongly to make sure that Buy American provisions, Buy American laws actually apply to the manufactured goods. I mean, I've said in front of Congress to representatives, do you want to explain to your constituents how our money got used to buy Chinese windmills? It makes no sense. We want to invest in our economy, invest in our people, and capture that innovation and create good jobs here.
And virtually all of the major industrialized countries in the world have some dimension of this. Some of them have drank too much of the free trade Kool-Aid, England being probably the biggest basket case in point, and they're going down in flames just like we are as a consequence of it. You know, Maggie Thatcher, but started that process. But bottom line, China certainly does, Japan does, South Korea does.
They all have strategies.
Yeah, they all have, and part of their strategy is to say that the domestic content laws, if you're going to sell something in our country, it has to have a certain percentage of the stuff actually made in our country, but at least in sectors or industrial sectors that we think are critical. So AFL-CIO is pushing for a Buy American provision in this economic recovery package.
Absolutely. We think it should cover all manufactured goods. It's not just iron and steel, which is one amendment that was proposed in the House, but it needs to be broader. It needs to be inclusive. It only makes sense if we are trying it, and it's an economic recovery package, that we make sure we make those investments in our domestic economy so that, in fact, we do recover. I think going beyond that, more importantly, is that we really do want to capture the technology and innovation of the future and be making those things here. Companies and the people lost sight that when you offshore those jobs, you offshore not just the frontline and skilled workers, but it's the research, design, and engineering. And that means that next choice, that next investment, that next best idea is being made in someone else's economy, not this one. And we've got to turn that around.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And how are you going to deal with the Republicans who yell and scream and say, oh, wait a minute, we want IBM to continue offshoring jobs?
I would dare them to stand up and say that, frankly. I mean, this is a fight that's ready to be picked in our economic situation.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I would hope that Senator Reid will give them an opportunity to try to filibuster, and then we can all see what their real agenda is.
Well, Tom, I tell you, the list you read at the beginning of the show, GE was in there, GE and all these guys just sent out a letter to try and stop this movement to put Buy American in the laws, and I hope your listeners call up their congressperson and let them know this is important. We want our money spent here.
Yep.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
The community organizer, Tom Hartman. Nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Yes, Citigroup about to purchase a brand new corporate jet, $50 million, luxury French-made leather seats, sofas, customizable entertainment center, top-of-the-line wines. This is with our $45 billion government bailout. But speaking of governments.
Baby, take off your coat.
Our full money alert for the day. Guess who's asking to be taxed?
Baby, take off your shoe. I'll take your shoe.
Yeah, they want to pay their fair share.
Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes.
And it turns out that there's a reason, actually, why the brothels in Nevada are asking to be taxed. See, right now they only pay $100 state tax. That's it. All the taxes that they pay are to the local counties that they're in. And they figure that if they can start paying tax money to the state, that all this discussion that's going on in the state about outlawing the brothels will go away. Interesting plan. One never knows. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Shirley in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Shirley, what's up? Shirley, you're on the air.
One never knows.
Shirley in Fort Lauderdale. Okay, let me put Shirley on hold, and let's see. Dick in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Dick.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing, buddy?
Just fine. What's up?
Oh, I just wanted to tell you I enjoyed Obama's speech, but you know what? I just hope he goes through and gets this job economy straightened up and not cut our Medicare. Those are the assets to your organization, and not worry about corporate America. That's my take.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dick. Barry, and incoherent as always. Barry in Kansas City. Hey, Barry.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Just great.
Hey, Tom,
what's up?
I've been trying to get this idea out to the Obama transition team and the White House, emailed them multiple times. Basically, they're about ready to spend a lot of federal dollars on the roads and bridges. But I was trying to get the idea that what they should do with all these large commercial vehicles, they should have these very large, I call them travel truck ports, whatever, where they basically have nothing but trailers to park there, and then about 200, 300 miles apart, it would kill all the idling, all the parking on the streets. It would bring people home every day because basically a driver would go 200 to 300 miles in one direction, turn around, pick up a trailer, go back in the other direction, and it would increase the efficiency and the time that it would actually deliver the goods throughout America. You'd eliminate having these team situations where these drivers are, you know, one sleeping in the bunk, the other guy's driving. They're never home, quality of life. And then here's the other big plus is now you could actually having the pressure of what they call productivity of the employee where, you know, they give you 70 hours to drive. And, you know, most companies, they try to get you to do 70 hours, put pressure on you. Now you could basically work 40 hours a week and live like, you know, an American should, be home every day. Yeah. I mean, and it would probably create about 300,000 jobs because basically, you know, there's a lot of older people that are driving, and now, you know, they're being pushed to drive 60, you know, at least 60 hours a week. Now, if you take all that, do all that math, about 1.5 million trucks over the road. And here's another huge plus. It could actually keep an eye on this. As far as if I was a terrorist, I want to do some damage. The best way to do it is take a 55-footer and outfit it and bring it into a city. Well, basically, you'd be able to monitor the traffic a lot more tighter, and you'd be able to, you know, keep track of, you know, the activities of the trucks, where they're coming from, where they're going.
Yeah.
And then if you see a rogue truck, you could basically, you know, have an idea that it is a rogue truck and that stuff might be up.
Well, you've given it a lot of thought, Barry. Thanks for sharing that with us. I'm a little skeptical about it. I'm not sure I want to move that close to George Orwell society, but we'll see. Sean in Indianapolis. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Tom. Two quick comments.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing getting abused more than the prisoners in Guantanamo are Bush's kidneys right now.
Bush's kidneys?
From drinking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. His liver, actually, I think, is what's dealing with it. Yeah.
Well, you know, somewhere around that area. I'm
yep.
Sorry.
Yep.
Okay. And I hope Obama makes it possible for us people with disabilities to work without us losing our benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, I would have to be making over $100,000. To equal the benefits and stuff that I'm getting right now. It's like we're getting paid to stay home, and that
right.
I've been doing that too long.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm not capable. I really want to work.
Yeah, but the problem is that you've had over 100 surgeries and you've got some serious disabilities, and you can't. If we had a national health insurance program that covered you, so you wouldn't lose those benefits, those, you know, the things that are keeping you alive, Sean, then you could work, right?
Well, I do also have I actually do have the best health care on the planet. That's my dad's federal employee, Blue Cross.
Uh-huh.
But I'm talking about my subsidized housing and my SSI and Medicaid secondary. They pick up what my dad's health care insurance doesn't.
I see. Yeah, I think we need to expand our social safety net is the bottom line here, Sean. So whether people are working or not, so that people don't have to make the kind of decision you are to not work so that you don't lose the benefits that keep you alive. Or the alternative, of course, would be to raise the minimum wage. But your point is well taken. Sean, thank you for the call. It's always nice to hear from you.
All right. Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom, thank you very much for what you do.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
One of the things that I'm always arguing with my right-winger friends is the taxes for corporations and small businesses,
mm-hmm.
How they're supposed to be now with the Barack Obama now in the picture, and they're really scared. And the first thing they do is just call the communists,
yeah.
You know. And I relate back to Dr. Ravi Batra and his way of thinking, and I was wondering if you had some other books I could read up on and other economists that
sure.
I could look at. Cause,
yeah, let me give you two, Frank. There's a guy named Chang. I think his name is Zha Jin Chang, but in any case, the title of his book is Bad Samaritans, and it is brilliant. Bad Samaritans is a brilliant book. Anything by Dean Baker. Dean Baker's written a number of books. He's an excellent and progressive economist. And then there's another one. Sir James Goldsmith has been dead for 5 or 6 years, but he wrote a book. He was one of the richest men in England at the time, and he wrote a book called The Trap. And, in fact, all of these have been my BuzzFlash books of the month at various times. In fact, if you go to BuzzFlash.com for 5 years now, I think it is, for a long time in any case, I've been writing every single month a book review for them, and we very often get the authors on the show here, and you'll find a lot of those interviews on our website at TomHartmann.com and our free audio archives. But Mark can aggregate onto one page all the years worth of reviews that I've done, because there are a number of books on economics that we've looked at over the years. You may have to search a couple of different pages on the BuzzFlash.com website right now, but there's some excellent economic writing out there, Frank. And you know, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Justin in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Justin, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Yeah, I was listening to a show yesterday here locally called Champions of Justice, and they had a lawyer on who represents a guy in Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Texas conservative Republican, and he's doing it for free, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the stats he came across in Guantanamo was that only 8% of all the people who have gone through Guantanamo Bay are considered terrorists by the U.S. government. That means 92% are obviously not terrorists.
Right.
And then another study came across was, of all the same detainees there, only 10% of the people picked up were picked up by U.S. military forces. The rest were picked up by, like, Northern Alliance, the Afghan.
They were sold to us. We offered a bounty.
They were sold to us. Exactly.
Right. We were paying $5,000 per head. In a country where the average per capita income is $500 per year. So we were offering a 10-year paycheck,
yep.
Right? The equivalent of $400,000 in the United States, with $40,000 more or less being the median income in the U.S. We were offering a 10-year paycheck for somebody, and what people were doing was they were settling grudges. They were saying, you know, that neighbor of mine, his dog barks all night long, or, you know, it's usually typically much worse than that. You know, I didn't like his son marrying my daughter, or we've had a blood feud in our families going back 5 generations, but basically a lot of people were settling feuds that way. Justin, spot on. And yeah, very few of them have to do with terrorism. Instead, they were considered enemy combatants. And the other statistic or factoid that's interesting is the Bush administration, as they were going out, they were saying a lot of these released Gitmo guys are back doing terrorist activities. Turns out, speaking out against the United States is considered a terrorist activity by them.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Mark, someone is staring at me.
What, like making eyes at you?
Yeah, I guess.
Where? Over there?
Oh, behind you. He's sort of small, like a little stack of money, and he has these big eyes, like googly eyes. He's staring at me.
You sound like you're sort of enjoying this.
Well...
That's it. No, I'm looking.
Oh!
What, that? That's the money we could be saving with Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Barack Obama has chosen his top personnel. Now, what should be his top policies? Change for America is the first book with a comprehensive blueprint for President Obama to reset policy on the economy, healthcare, and foreign affairs. Edited by Air America President Mark Green, it describes a new progressive patriotism based on more democracy, diplomacy, and green-collar jobs. President Clinton calls it insightful, while Senator Kennedy concludes it's a brilliant roadmap for the 44th president. Change for America, available at bookstores everywhere.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
If I stay on the res, I'll be 8 times less likely to drop out of college.
If I stay on the res,
I won't be just another number.
I can learn biology in my native language.
I can use my education to help my people.
If I stay on the res,
I'll be more likely to transfer to a university.
6 times more likely.
If I stay on the res,
there's a 9 in 10 chance I'll finish college.
And I will finish college.
I will learn about the old ways so my culture will live on.
I will make my parents proud.
I'll make my people proud.
Our history will not be forgotten.
If I stay on the res,
I can get a quality education.
At a tribal college.
At a tribal college.
If I stay on the res.
If I stay on the res.
If I stay on the res.
To learn more about the nation's tribal colleges and how they're helping Native American people and the reservations, contact the American Indian College Fund at collegefund.org or call 1-800-776-3863. The American Indian College Fund, educating the mind and spirit.
Later, much later, we heard something. We didn't breathe for listening. Then footsteps on the back porch, creeping, then more confident. After all, nobody was home. A hand closed on the knob on the screen door to the kitchen and found it latched. We heard a little sawing sound as a file began to slice through the screen wire. Grandma reached down for something in her sewing basket. Through the darkness, I managed to notice Grandma's rocker was rocking and she wasn't in it. She was standing over me. "Keep just behind me," she whispered. I followed her across the room into the kitchen. Now we were by the door and I heard the scuffle of heavy feet in there on the crinkly linoleum. Grandma turned back to me. Under my nose, she struck a wooden match with her thumbnail. She touched the match to something in her other hand. It sizzled. Then she leaned down and rolled it into the invisible kitchen. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book A Long Way from Chicago by Richard Peck. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Viagra for your brain. Let's go back to Shirley in Fort Lauderdale. I believe you're back with us, Shirley.
Yes, I am.
Hi, what's up?
Mr. Hartman, I wonder if you could explain what the benefits will be if the government nationalizes the banks.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Shirley. What would the benefit be if the government nationalizes the banks? The benefit would be that the banks will continue to exist. The argument that Andrew Mellon made, who was the Secretary of the Treasury in 1930, 29, 30, 31, and early 32 through the Hoover administration, the scion of the Mellon family, the multi-billionaire, The argument that Andrew Mellon made was that we should, he said, liquidate labor, liquidate business, liquidate stocks, liquidate everything, and, you know, and the competent business people will come in and pick up the pieces. And that's essentially what Hoover did. And what it did was it destroyed anybody who wasn't extremely wealthy to begin with, and it destroyed the banks. And I think that there's a broad consensus that our banks are such important institutions. I lack a better word, but they're essentially part of the commons, that we can't just have it fall apart. Now, there needs to be some major structural changes. Number one, banks should not be able to get into the gambling business. They shouldn't be in the investment business. We need to reinstitute the Glass-Steagall Act that was passed in the 1930s so that what happened in the 20s couldn't happen again. That was repealed in 1999 at the urging of Phil Graham, signed by Bill Clinton. But the Republicans pushed that thing through, repealing Glass-Steagall. That was a huge mistake and probably the single most thing most responsible for what's going on right now. So we need to re-regulate them, number one. Number two, we need to break big banks up into small banks so that you've got community banks. Let banks only operate within states. Let have banks operate under state charters rather than federal charters so that no bank is too big to fail. And the worst it can get is a statewide bank failure of a single bank that has a bunch of competitors. We need to go back to local banking and competition. You know, but the way to accomplish, and number three, we need to nationalize the Fed. Not the banks themselves, in my opinion, but the Fed. And the Federal Reserve is not federal, and it's not a reserve. You know, the only money in the United States that's actually made by the United States and it's actually U.S. currency is our coins. If you pull a quarter or a nickel or a dime or a dollar coin out of your pocket or a half dollar coin out of your pocket, that's the only real money that our government makes and that it owns. Everything else is made by the Fed. Our dollar bills, our paper money, and all the electronic money, it's made by the Fed. And it's not owned by us. The Fed is a private corporation with private investors that own it. And we should own the Fed. So the Treasury Department should buy the Fed. And over the short term, as the banks are failing, we should do what we did with the SNLs, which is we should buy them, like Northern Rock was bought by Gordon Brown by the UK government, and buy them not with preferred shares, which are non-voting shares, even though it sounds cool, preferred. They're not preferred. They're crummy shares. Instead of buying preferred shares, we should buy a majority share in these banks and buy the actual stock so that we can say, okay, that's it. We are now the board of directors. We the people. And we are going to throw out the bums who created this disaster, and we're going to fire the executives. And Citicorp is not going to buy its $50 million jet, thank you very much, for its corporate executives, et cetera, et cetera. That's my take on it. Sylvia in Bellflower, California. Hey, Sylvia.
Hi, Tom. It's so good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I know that you can straighten this out for me. Is there any connection at all between the supply side economics and the two Santa Clauses?
Yes.
And also any connection between Milton Friedman's philosophy of finance and our new Secretary of the Treasury, since he also worked for Kissinger Incorporation, and his father, who oversaw the Ford Foundation microfinance programs in Indonesia, which was being developed by Ann Durham Sotero, Obama's mom. Could you straighten that out for me?
Well, I have some ambivalence about our new Secretary of the Treasury, and so I'm not, you know, I'm going to wait and see. I'm not going to,
okay,
you know, get on a high horse about him right now,
Tim
Geithner. With regard to the two Santa Claus theory and supply side economics, these were both phrases that were invented by Jude Wodinski, and in the 70s, in 74, and this two Santa Claus theory was rolled out in 76 to conservatives as a way to govern and get what they wanted done, but completely fool the American people about what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an op-ed about it that you can find at commondreams.org today. It's on their homepage as one of the posts for today.
Mm-hmm.
And it just lays it all out, complete with his memos and everything else. And basically, they've been scamming us for 30 years. It's just been a complete scam. And you know, he and Laffer got together back in the 70s and the early 80s, and you know, said, okay, supply side will work and the Laffer curve will work, and Reagan tried it and it didn't work. It was a disaster. Mm-hmm. So then they had to bring out the two Santa Claus theory. They had to say, okay, we're going to give you tax cuts, and don't look behind the curtain. You know, the man mm-hmm. behind the curtain is the debt. Mm-hmm. Don't look behind the curtain. And we're also going to continue increasing the size of government. The government grew mm-hmm. faster under Reagan and under George W. Bush than it has grown mm-hmm. under any president in history, with the arguable exception of Franklin Roosevelt, particularly with regard to World War II. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just an explosion. So they're saying one thing and doing another. They get mm-hmm. to play Santa Claus like, you know, they were always, you know, upset that the Democrats were able to do, play Santa Claus by giving out Social Security checks to people. And then they get to be a second Santa Claus that the Democrats weren't even talking about, which is cutting taxes. And I think that Obama has figured this thing out, and hopefully he's going to give him a dose of his own medicine. Hopefully. Coming up tomorrow, Dan Gaynor, VP of the Business and Media Institute. We're going to talk about why conservatives freak out when local governments address climate change. And Ronnie Deutsch will be here to answer your tax questions. Come with your tax questions in hand. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.